The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my friend Ray Allen, Ray engineering and producing the show. And soon, over the next couple of weeks, he'll actually be on the other side of the glass, this side of the glass, because this is getaway day for me as I take off for vacation. We've got some great guest hosts lined up, and Ray's going to be doing a couple of shows. We've just got, a great lineup, let's put it that way. It is May the 9th. Rahina Romero is with us in studio, Democrat representing Ward Number 1. Rahina, how are you?
Hi, Bill. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Doing very well today. And I'll tell you, I call our weather, this is the June in May weather we're
yes,
having.
Yes, absolutely.
Have you noticed that everything's kind of been pushed up 6 weeks?
Yes, I have. And I just want to make sure that we are very conscious about how our climate is changing. It is happening, folks. Climate change is happening.
And many here in Arizona, we're on the front lines of
yes,
this.
Here in Arizona. I was just going to say that.
Look at last summer.
We are an epicenter of heat.
120 unofficially last summer. But anyway, you were out on the picket lines with the Red for Ed folks, and you were very supportive of the movement. Do you think they raised public awareness, but did they accomplish what they set out to do?
I think that teachers, educators in Arizona wanted more. They wanted a funding source tied to their raises, and they did not get that from Governor Ducey.
The governor has made some promises.
The governor has made some promises, but at the expense of many other programs. For example, the Ducey tax imposed on TUSD families, which is $16.7 million, is basically grabbing $16.7 million that state is responsible for desegregation money, taking it from TUSD families, and then having TUSD families raise their property taxes to come up with that $16 million. So, unfortunately, I don't think we all and educators across the state got what they intended, but they did get something. And I think from now on, it's on to November, because education, public education, is one of the most important issues on the ballot this November.
Do you think this has kind of gotten a lot of teachers who may not have decided that they were, maybe they did have been forever, whatever reason, not voting? You think this time around they're going to be energized?
I would just use the word that millennials are using now. I think they're woke.
They've woke.
I think they've woke. I think that, educators are paying attention. They are keeping track of what legislators are voting for and really are keeping track, and they will vote their pocketbook this November.
Who are you supporting of the Democratic candidates for governor?
I committed myself early to Dr. David Garcia, specifically because of this issue, Bill, because I feel that Dr. Garcia, he is a professor at ASU. Education is what he teaches. He is a veteran, second-generation Arizonan, completely prepared to take this state into the 21st century, and believes he's a product of public schools. He believes in investing in public schools, and will make education a top priority.
Rahina Romero is with us, 790-2040. On your Facebook page, I notice you're pretty fired up about this, the distribution of road money. And apparently it's not going equally to each of the wards. Is that correct?
Well, Bill, it's
how
a little bit difficult to explain.
Yeah.
This is the thing.
What's the bottom line?
So you remember it back when voters voted on Prop 409. That was back, I believe, back in 2014, that voters said, yes, we will approve bonds to improve our roads. That measure passed in the city of Tucson by like 700 votes. It was is very close.
Yeah, it was close.
But Tucson voters said, we believe in investing in our roads, and we want to give you additional funds to do it. Well, back with the Prop 409 days, the distribution of funds went like this, of those residential funds. They went like these. Ward 1 received 7% of Prop 409
That's
funds.
Your ward.
That's Ward 1. That's mine. Ward 2 received 9.8%. Mm-hmm. Ward 3 received 7.4%. Ward 4 received 21%. Ward 5 received 16% of those funds, and Ward 6 received 37.73% of those funds.
So how did
Ward 1 was the one that got the biggest punch on the gut in terms of those funds, $1 million. And so now this time around with a sales tax Prop 101, this time around, the Bond Oversight Commission is about to make decisions on how to invest our residential funds for those roads, those road money.
Yeah.
And I recently, back in April 5th, I sent a memo to the Oversight Commission, including our mayor and city council, our city manager, and the residents of Tucson, basically saying, look, I'm asking for an equitable distribution of Prop 101 funds. Ward 1 and other of my colleagues, Ward 2, Ward 3, Ward 5, we all received much less distribution of these funds than the others.
Why was that?
You know,
did you ever get a good explanation?
I haven't really gotten a good explanation, because one of the things they say is that we're going to do worst roads first. Well, I hardly believe that Ward 1 only had 7% of the worst roads in the city of Tucson. Ward 1 has 20% of the population of Tucson, and we have one of the oldest, we have the oldest neighborhoods in our city. And so for me, it's a matter of equity. It's a matter of advocating for not just my ward, Ward 2, Ward 3, Ward 5. We need to see an equitable distribution, and equal is not equitable. With Prop 101 funds, if they say, okay, we'll give you $5 million each. Well, no, that's not fair either, because it will continue to cement the inequity of what happened with Prop 409 funds.
So this decision is being made at this
It is actually being made. So,
asking for public input?
I am. I'm asking the residents of Tucson to, you know, to call the mayor's office, because all of us have an appointee on this bond oversight committee. I have an appointee, Ward 1, Ward 2. The mayor has an appointee. The city manager has an appointee. And I think Ward 5 and Ward 1 have been holding hands in terms, our appointees, in terms of trying to bring attention to this inequity. But we need the mayor's appointee to pay attention. We need the city manager's appointee to pay attention. And all we're asking for is to give us a scenario that treats all of us residents in the city of Tucson equally. Give us equitable funding for Prop 101 residential funds. So if I may, I've put this all over social media.
Yeah, it's all over your Facebook page.
And I've asked our residents of Tucson to call the mayor's office to say, you know, Mr. Mayor, ask your appointee to look at an equitable distribution of Prop 101 funds. And his number, if your listeners are inclined to call the mayor, his number is 791-4201. And I'm also asking people to call the city manager to ask for an equitable distribution at 791-4204.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. But before we hear from all of our recorded messages of our fine partners here on the program, Rahina Romero, do you like bakery goods?
My goodness, it's my passion.
You like freshly
baked bread? Oh, is my passion.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Mona's Danish Bakery, our favorite bakery here in town, it's the home of the Danish Kringle. They're located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner Steve and Sherry do just a beautiful job with their baked goods. Steve and his team of bakers are up at 3 a.m. in the morning, and they are preparing all of those great breads for your sandwich right now at Mona's. And this would be a great time to stop by for lunch. Go to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link to Mona's Danish Bakery and a link to all of the fine partners on the on this program. These are people that I personally endorse. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com, we are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays live during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, and always on BuckmasterShow.com. Back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We had some exciting news that we announced here last week on the program. Zocalo, it's a really popular place over there at near the corner of Country Club and Broadway. It's popular because they have great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Well, here's the deal. They now will become part of Green Things. So they'll be moving all of that merchandise, and that merchandise will be going over to the 13-acre site at Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Here's the good news. I mean, it's all good news. Zocalo, all that merchandise is at a drastically reduced level right now because, well, heck, they won't need to move it over to Green Things. They're going to have a great sale, and the sale is underway right now at Zocalo, corner of Country Club and Broadway. Rahina Romero is with us, a Democrat representing Ward 1. Councilwoman Romero, what do you make of this proposal that's been put forth by the Tucson Conquistadors? They want a remake of two of the 18-hole golf courses at Reed Park, making that into a venue for a championship golf tournament beginning in 2021. What did you think of this?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, it's unacceptable to present a concept that could cost many millions of dollars. And by the way, they're not specifying who would pay those millions of dollars for this vision. Without having a public conversation with mayor and council. I think that...
Did you get a letter about this?
I did receive a copy of a letter that was sent to the city manager, and I had heard, some concepts that that the Conquistadores wanted to come back to Tucson and bring their tour to Tucson. I think what's unfortunate about it is that, as you well know, Bill, that golf, we're over-golfed here in our region. The city of Tucson has had horrendous bleeding.
Yeah, a lot of red ink.
Lots of red ink in our golf, in our golf system. And as a matter of fact, at one point, it was $10 million in the hole, and our general fund was lending it money. We have more than $25 million in capital improvement needs in our five municipal golf courses. And by the way, golfing is an all-time low.
Yeah, people aren't playing golf as much. Yeah,
so
there's no question about it.
We actually really, in the mayor and council, we have tried to do as much as we possibly can to keep five golf courses alive in the city of Tucson. We've gone to private management. We've changed things around. We've tried to do everything we possibly can. And even though the system is not bleeding anymore, it still has $25 million worth of capital needs. So in my eyes, I look at $25 million that we have to invest in our golf courses or our parks,
parks
that basically are open to everyone in the community that have more than $300 million worth of needs in terms of infrastructure.
We have a new city parks director, and we're going to hear from him within weeks here on the show about what his vision is to kind of turn our parks around. And we're not knocking the Conquistadors here. They're a great nonprofit group that supports youth programs through golfing events. But you're saying right now you just don't feel this is right.
Well, and to be honest with you, I think that the bottom line is who's going to pay for their vision? And so I think that we need to continue talking about, it's okay to think outside the box. I think I actually like that. Mm-hmm. It's important that we do because we have a monumental task ahead as to how do we decide as a city and a region who is responsible to provide municipal golf? Is it the city of Tucson? Is it private golf clubs? So do we invest $25 million in our golf municipal golf courses? Do we take it? We need to have this conversation. I'm not knocking down the Conquistadores, but it would be... It would behoove us to have a good conversation in public at a mayor and council study session to not just make declarations in the front page of the paper, but actually think about what's the best decisions for the resources of the residents of Tucson and how do we move ahead.
We've had a couple of questions, but they've been kind of off topic about the desegregation order that's been in effect. Oh, my goodness. It was in effect before I came to town in 1988. I think it's 40 years old, one of the longest, the TUSD desegregation. We've actually had a couple of calls, Councilwoman, people wondering, you know, who is responsible for the deseg order. That is not a city of Tucson, in the city of Tucson's portfolio.
No, it's not in the city of Tucson's portfolio. As a matter of fact, it's not even in the in TUSD's portfolio. Desegregation
funds. It's handled by a federal
It is a court order.
Right. It's a
federal
court order. Yeah.
And it is, it has been the responsibility to fund the desegregation order of the state.
Now, you are also, well, you have actually a couple of hats that you wear. You not only are a Tucson City Councilwoman, but you also work for the Tucson-based Center for Biological Diversity.
Yes, I'm the director of Latino Engagement for the Center for Biological Diversity.
How are they doing? How's the center doing?
We're doing wonderful, and I love my job because it pertains to protecting our environment and our endangered species and our public lands, and so it's something that I'm very passionate about.
They started off over in Silver City, one of our longtime sponsors. That's Silver City was kind of the home base of where the whole Center for Biological Diversity began, and then they moved the entire operation now over to Tucson.
We have Tucson has the main office. Still have the four co-founders as part of the organization. One of them is the executive director. Mm-hmm. Our main office is in Tucson, but you would be amazed. We have offices in L.A., in Oakland, in Portland, in D.C., in Florida.
Mm. Wow.
We just recently opened one in Nevada. Mm. And we have home offices throughout the nation. And we have an office in La Paz, Baja California, Mexico.
Wow.
And so we have grown leaps and bounds. And one of our programs, if I can take the liberty, Bill, one of our programs, our population sustainability program, has partnered a historical partnership with Planned Parenthood. We're actually putting together a community conversation, a community discussion tonight in Tucson from 6:30 to 8 p.m. We'll be at the YWCA of Southern Arizona, located at 525 North Bonita Avenue.
And so no matter how you feel about this, bring your opinions to the session.
Bring your opinions to the session.
This is open to everyone, and you'll have a chance to voice your opinion on this.
And we have, it's called Protect Reproductive Rights, Protect the Planet, and how connecting reproductive rights pertains to the environment. So this is going to be tonight. We're having a conversation also on Thursday in Phoenix. We had one in Prescott, and we're having one in Somerton, Arizona on Saturday.
Okay. We have a couple of minutes left, so we're going to go back to city business. And is it Patrick? Patrick has called us, Councilwoman Romero, and he would like to weigh in on the golf course issue that we were discussing. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, I wanted to say I'm really pleased to hear that Councilmember Romero is talking about actually having the conversation about the golf courses, because the last time around, Barrio Hollywood found out that the city of Tucson was in secret negotiations with Grand Canyon University. We found out from the Arizona Daily Star. So, you know, conversations were happening in secret before. So I'm glad to hear that now at least Councilmember Romero is willing to actually talk to the community before she goes ahead and makes promises to sell our public land.
And, okay.
You know, that was the big issue with me. The other issue is that the city was sued over the same issue and lost in court because they did not want to turn over the documents. They said that the public did not have a right to see the negotiations with Grand Canyon University.
Okay, thanks, Patrick, for
Well, and just for the record, Patrick is completely wrong.
Okay.
The conversations were happening were public, and neighbors in the area were absolutely clued in to any type of conversations that we're having with TRIO at the time, which is the economic development arm of the region. So it's I have to disagree with Patrick.
All right. You want to set the record straight.
I want to set the record straight. Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned.
All right. 28 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can work in one more call. Ray has called us. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how's everything going?
Real good. Real quickly, Ray.
Okay. Basically, she was talking about roads. And in my mind, an elected official, the first thing you should do is address the needs of the constituents. And in my mind, that should have been day one from the time she walked into the office. She should have been totally aware of the situation of the roads and the finances regarding her district.
Okay.
Now, if it took her up to today to figure out some of these things, there's something not quite right, and I just want to, I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks, Ray.
Thank you so much, Ray. No, absolutely. We've always paid attention to equity issues. We've always done and pleaded and sent memos and asked for what is equitable for all, not just Ward 1, all of the wards. And so now that we're having this conversation with Prop 101 funds, I want to make sure that I do everything I possibly can to do something about this inequity. So absolutely, we've been aware. We've advocated for road improvements from Prop 409 to Prop 401. We've been very aware. We've informed our residents and constituents, and we will continue to do so, just like I'm doing with this particular topic. And if you'd like to act, Ray, I'd like to ask you that you call the mayor at 791-4201 and the city manager at 791-4204 and ask them to ask their appointees to do an equitable distribution of Prop 101 funds.
All right. We're going to have to leave it right there. Councilwoman Romero, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, Bill.
1231 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll take our break right here. Be right back. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. It's May 9th, and as I said earlier in the show, it's June in May in Tucson, celebrating 100, I guess you could say celebrating post-100 temperatures, right? Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico makes a great getaway if you're looking for a place to cool off. I mean, my goodness, the elevation is anywhere from about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, so that makes for warm days and pleasantly cool nights over in Silver City. It's only a three-hour drive over there. It's a pretty part of the southwestern United States. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find the great places to stay in Silver City and a full list of the many recreation opportunities, including just hanging out and exploring historic Silver City or just relaxing in a lovely environment. We welcome now David Safir. David joins us once a month here on the Buckmaster Show. David writes about education in the column known as The Range. He blogs about education at TucsonWeekly.com. David, how are you?
I'm doing well, basically. Thank you.
Basically, everything you want to know about education, we're going to cover in the next half hour.
No, we're not.
There is enough to talk about a tremendous amount of material that we do need to cover. As you heard during the interview with Councilwoman Romero, we had at least two calls during the program. People are confused about this desegregation order. And I think there's been a lot of attention on it, that there was some talk that under the plan that was approved by the legislature, that folks living in the TUSD district were going to see a bump in their property taxes.
Right.
So people were calling wondering if the city had anything to do with
it. No, it doesn't. And Rahina did a very good job of explaining it. Basically, about 40 years ago, maybe longer, the courts decided that the schools in TUSD were segregated. There were the whites and Hispanics, and I guess to the extent they're African Americans, weren't equally distributed. So they put a court order, a federal court order, which was looked over by a judge. And we have somebody who's called a special master, which you may have heard in terms of the investigations up at the Trump level right now about the Russia involvement, a special master looking over the district. They've been doing that for 40 years. And because we have the desegregation order, we have extra money in TUSD because the order demands more administrators. It demands more teachers in special areas. So it actually costs money to the district to create the follow the desegregation order. So that money is paid for partially by property taxes amongst Tucson property owners, and partially by the state, because the property tax can only go up to a certain level. And when the property tax goes higher than that, the state covers it. Well, the state has been covering, what is it, 16 million, I think it is, or 16.9. Mm-hmm. And this time, they said they're throwing it back to the city. Hmm. So money that was coming from the state into TUSD now is going to come from the property owners here. But the city council can't say no. And the county can't say no because Ducey and the Republicans in the legislature said, yes, it's done by legislation. And that was one of their many budget-cutting acts. And by cutting budget, as Councilwoman Romero said, they've actually put some of the burden back on Tucson, and not just property owners, because every renter, let's face it, renters pay property tax. The people who own the buildings figure that into the cost of rent.
But boy, when you start talking about people's pocketbooks and an increase in property tax, suddenly folks who had paid no attention to this DSEG order are suddenly asking, well, my goodness, why do we still have it after 40 years?
Well, why do we still have it is a good question. Yeah. And there is, it looks as if it's going to be going away in one sense in a few years. That's what's being talked about between the district. And there are lawyers who are arguing for the Hispanic population, lawyers arguing for the African-American population. Between the district and the lawyers and the special master and the court, it looks like it may be going away. However, when it goes away, the money doesn't go away quickly, because the idea is if you withdraw the money, it's going to beggar the district. It's all, it still has to do these things. It just won't be under court order. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if it stopped next year, if what the state did wouldn't still impact property owners here in Tucson.
790-2040 if you have any questions or comments for David Safir. And of course, we want to talk about the recent Red for Ed strike. What were the wins that you saw, David, from this? Were there some very pronounced wins, in your opinion?
Well, I think so. And, you know, people are talking rightly that the teachers didn't get nearly what they wanted. They asked for 20%. Ducey and the legislature didn't give them 20%. They gave them 9% plus one that was already going to be there. And then there's supposed to be another 5% raise next year and another 5% raise the year after that. So 10 plus 5 plus 5 equals 20.
Isn't that guaranteed down by law now?
No,
it isn't.
No, that's okay. they wrote that in there saying this is what we're going to do.
Oh.
But if they have an economic shortfall, they're not going to be able to do it. So that's up in the air. That's a promise. And pie in the sky, you can't cut it up and eat it, you know.
So,
but I think they want, you like that, huh?
Yeah.
I think they want a lot. One thing they want, obviously, is the pay raise, but this was huge. Ducey said there was enough money in the district funding for them to give teachers raises before that. And he said the 1% raise we're giving them is plenty. The district can put in the rest. All of a sudden, for the first time, Ducey, seeing the political writing on the wall, said, I think the teachers deserve this money and the schools deserve this money. And one thing he said that just thrilled me is he said, you know what? The teachers have earned it. They've really done a great job with the kids. So there wasn't the usual public school bashing I hear so often coming from the higher levels in the Republican Party. He said, these people are doing the job. They deserve to be paid accordingly.
And before you continue on, if he had decided not to make that move and stay with a very small 1% or 2%, do you think that he and his political planners were saying, this will be political suicide?
I believe so. And if we get around to talking to it, people are telling, are saying, who don't want the teachers to stay active, they're saying, for God's sake, don't be political. Well, what they're saying is, let Ducey be political, let the legislators be political, but don't you involve yourself in politics. But he was. This was a very, very smart political move.
Yes.
He salvaged as much as he could out
right.
of the situation and probably increased the chances of remaining as governor. I don't know what's going to happen.
All right. Now, back to what you were saying.
Another thing that happened was we've got teachers mobilized. Teachers are, I've been a teacher, scattered all over the place. We all sit in our classrooms. We see people in the lunchroom and at faculty meetings, but we're not a unit.
Not really connected.
No. I felt like I was an individual agent, my own little business, David Safir, Inc., in my classroom, you know. But here, teachers got together, 50,000 teachers approximately in the state, and they're unified now for a single purpose. Teachers aren't usually good voters. They'll vote more. Teachers are usually kind of self-effacing and not self-serving because really they're thinking about the kids. Why else would somebody with a crummy salary spend $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 in the classroom just because they want to give their kids what they should have. So now they're mobilized, they're united, and that's great. That wouldn't have happened without Red for Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And the public, mm-hmm. I think the public, not everybody, but the public is behind them, not only here, but, boy, Bill, do you look at the national coverage of mm-hmm. Arizona on
yeah,
this?
Yeah, there was a lot.
Oh, we usually get such negative coverage. I remember a few years back on The Daily Show, Jon Stewart, he was talking about Arizona, and he called Arizona the meth lab of democracy. That was a term he used.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
Now,
pretty funny.
You did say you brought the public up, but there was, you know, there is some erosion, I think, of public support when the strike went on as long as it did.
Well, sure, but now that it's
I mean, I have
over,
no idea. I'm just, that's kind of my gut feeling that some parents might have been turned off by the whole thing.
Right, but were they turned off to the teacher's demands? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that because this was out there and because it was so exciting, the teachers made news all over the country. People started talking about teacher salaries and about the conditions in the classroom. And though they've been talked about, people haven't been paying attention. Now, all of a sudden, very few people can say, yeah, those fat and sassy teachers in their luxurious classrooms. You can't say that anymore. That's important.
All right.
Okay. Here's another thing that happened. Ducey loves to cut taxes every single year in the legislature. He cut very few, fewer
there
than he wanted to.
There were very few this year.
And
that's
why?
True.
The teachers and the public were watching. Mm-hmm. There's going to be something on the ballot to get rid of the universal ballot or universal voucher bill that Ducey and the Republicans put in. They were going to do something to make that invalid. They didn't do it because the state was watching. There were supposed to be increases of the tuition tax credit vouchers. That didn't happen. So all kinds of things didn't happen that would have been negative to the fiscal situation of the state budget, because people were watching. And finally, and this for me is huge and really important, we're going to have something called the Invest in Education Act, which is going to add a new tax system to help fund schools.
Why don't we talk about that after the break, what
Absolutely.
Exactly that is, and should the raise be spread to other educators, janitors, bus drivers in schools, should it be spread to all of the folks in public education? We'll talk about that with David Safir as well after we take our break.
The Humane Society of Southern Arizona's new location is open at 635 West Roger Road. Come fall in love with our pet-friendly cafe. Check out our giant cat habitats or meet a new dog friend in our doggy play yards. You can also bring your pet in for their vaccinations or spay-neuter surgery at our new state-of-the-art clinic. Come see all that we have to offer you and your pet at 635 West Roger Road. The Humane Society of Southern Arizona, saving your future best friend.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Back. It is the Buckmaster Show, my getaway day before we take off for vacation, actually, David Zephyr. So this
and you're going where?
We're going to the Bahamas.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. We've been talking about, you were talking before the break about the wins for the Red for Ed movement. We touched briefly on this initiative, but before we talk about the Invest in Education initiative, still with the teachers, Red for Ed, Dr. Trujillo, Gabriel Trujillo, is now saying that he's thinking about spreading around that 9 or 10%, not just to teachers, but to other support staff.
Right. He's a superintendent. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he's not the person who decides this. This is decided in negotiations between the teachers union that represents the teachers in Tucson and the board. But in their negotiations, Trujillo said, listen, the teachers got 9 plus 1, 10% raise, but they define teachers as only people in the classroom. So a counselor isn't a teacher. A librarian isn't a teacher. He said that everyone except the administrators, who are a different category, should all tap into this. And that means it won't be 9 or 10% if that happens. Now, if I were a teacher right now, still teaching and making the crummy salary that people's been making, I might say I don't want to share it.
Right.
But I hope they do. For one thing, those other people deserve it. Their salaries are crummy too, and you can't run a school without them. Some of these people are, I can't even tell you how great some of these people are. They're surrogate teachers and counselors and everything. Wonderful work. But the other thing is, I mentioned there are about 50,000 teachers. There are also about 40,000 non-administrator, non-teacher people. That's 90,000 people total who will be getting a raise and who will want to get more and stay united and stay active. So they will have nearly 100,000 people in Arizona who are involved in the biz, not counting parents, who will be fighting for this. And we've got to keep fighting because this is just really a beginning. The hole was so deep that we only dug ourselves a few feet out of it.
John has called us, and he would like to join in our conversation. He has a comment about the National Education Association. Go ahead, John.
Well, more than that, I was a public school teacher for 14 years, and I paid my dues into the union. And I just want to make a comment that, you know, the only time I ever heard from them or comments from them was during election cycles. And so I always tried to get something going. I never heard anything. I tried to get the teachers, make a movement to get teachers on the Arizona insurance plan, health insurance plan. It's a state health insurance plan. I talked to the state president of the Senate, and he said he'd never heard anybody bring that up. I brought it to my officials at the AEA, and nothing really ever came of it. I was very frustrated because over the years, I didn't get a raise for 11 years, got a 1% raise my last year as a teacher. And but I think both sides are, it's just so adversarial. There's no give and take between either side, and it's just very frustrating as a former teacher.
I agree that there are problems and frustrations with the union. Now, I was in a state in Oregon where I taught where the unions were much more powerful because of the way they were set up, and I saw their effect all over the place in lots of ways, including my union rep going in to talk with the principal with me when I had some kind of an issue I had to deal with. But when the money started being cut in Oregon, as it was in the mid-80s, everybody started getting less. The salaries weren't keeping up with inflation and things of that nature, and we were all very frustrated with the union. There's only so much a union can do, and in this state where they have been beggaring the public schools, literally making them so they should be going out in the streets with a tin cup, there's not much a union can do, and especially when the union only represents a small segment of the teacher population, because the teachers don't have to join in Arizona.
All right. What about this Invest in Education initiative? What is it?
Well, you have heard me over the years say that I think we should be taxing the rich more in this state. If you look at the numbers, you'll find out that counting all the state taxes that we pay, every dollar that we put into this, into taxes with property tax and sales tax and income tax, the rich pay a lower percentage of their income right now than the poor by a significant amount, and yet they can afford more, obviously, because they have more money. So there's this thing, the Invest in Education Act, that's been put together, and signatures have not been gathered yet, but I think they'll get there. And the idea is that when somebody's income hits $250,000, or for a couple $500,000, they get a bump up in the amount they pay. Their rates go higher. When they hit $500,000, or $1 million for a couple, their rates go up again. So it would only hit the top 2, maybe 2.5% of the people in the state. And yet by doing that, it's estimated that it would raise about $680 million, and that would cover a whole raft of pay raises and computers and fixing roofs and buying new buses and all kinds of things the schools simply haven't been able to do because they haven't had the money. And so this is, I'm very, very strongly for it, and I think the arguments against it are fairly bogus, because right now, literally, the wealthiest people in Arizona are not paying their fair share, even in the sense that they're not paying as much percentage-wise as the lower income.
Let's go to the live line again. Ingrid would like to join the conversation. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi. I have an acquaintance who claims that principals waste teachers' time. You made the statement that teachers get crummy salaries, or words to that effect. And I'd like to... And what do you really believe, that teachers are not well paid? Do you think that perhaps it's true that principals waste their time so that they have to take their work home? How can we put all that together and come to some kind of good conclusion about what should be done?
Well, I always attended faculty meetings begrudgingly and felt it was taking time away from me, and I felt that some of the paperwork was taking time away from me, when, as an English teacher, we grade lots of papers, and away from my students. But, you know, one principal will do that more, another one will do it less. Everybody always complains about their boss being less than they want them to be or demanding more from them. I don't think that is the primary issue. There is an issue when you put 30 to 35 kids in a class rather than 20 to 25. Now, that's a time suck on the teacher and an emotional burden on the teacher, and the kids don't get as much. If I were to ask whether the principals or the class size is causing teachers more grief, I would make it class size by a wide margin.
And your statement about crummy salaries, do you want to elaborate on that at all? Teachers and their crummy salaries?
Well,
I don't know if that was exactly
your words. We're $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000 below the national average. And there was one story, which is a true story, of a teacher in Yuma who left Yuma, stayed in Yuma, went across the California border and worked in a school in California and started making, I think he said, $20,000 more a year.
Just by crossing the Colorado River into California?
25-minute drive.
Oh,
that's what
goodness.
It was. And he stayed in his same house, and he made more literally by crossing the border. That's how wildly different it is. Now, if you give the 9% raise will give teachers $2,000-$4,000 more a year, which isn't enough. I was a teacher. I know how hard teachers work and how teachers need to be compensated. And it's something. It's a start, but not nearly as much as what every school around district around us, except possibly the state of Utah, may be the same. Everyone else pays better salaries than we do.
All right, David Safir, we'll look for your work at TucsonWeekly.com under the range, which is pretty much everything from A to Z, and you're primarily concerned with education. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. I'll be taking a few days off on vacation. We've got some great guest hosts starting tomorrow with Dan Gibson from Visit Tucson. He's got a full hour on Tucson tourism. Appropriately enough, this is National Tourism Week, so that fits in really good. Dylan Smith will host the show on Friday. And coming up this afternoon, Mike Check with Mike Shaw and Ray Allen, Ray being one of the guest hosts for me while I am away. So on behalf of Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.